Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello, my name's Nigel Jones, and I'm Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan, and welcome to today's edition of Bodcast. Today we're going to have a discussion with Tom Coates from FTA Law on the subject of the steps practice owners should take to ensure they don't get into costly disputes with business partners, with staff, or with family members. So not disputes with patients, but disputes arising from the running of the business, basically. So Tom, thank you very much for joining us. Would you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, no problem. I'm a corporate solicitor. I'm the managing director of FTA Law. The specialisms that I do are business advice to dentists, primarily on the sales and purchase of practices side, commercial advice in respect of NHS contracting, and commercial structures in respect of partnerships, expense sharing, company incorporations, and that type of thing.
So when we were talking before, we were sort of entitling this podcast, How to Avoid Your Lawyer. So why that title, and what sort of things do you find yourself advising practice owners on?
Well, the title came from the fact that I'm very conscious of the fact that lawyers don't have the best reputation. If you think of the stereotypical lawyer who charges significant amounts of money, not provides great value to their clients and that kind of thing, obviously their character's to be avoided. Legal services are to some extent a distressed purchase. Nobody really wants to pay a solicitor to do work for them. There are certain things for which it's unavoidable. For example, if you want to buy and sell a practice, you will need a solicitor. If you want to buy and sell a house, you will need a solicitor. But there are certain other things, particularly on the dispute side of things, where a little bit of investment in legal services at the very beginning can save significant amounts of money further down the line. And in particular, we see this in the dental sector, where people haven't got the correct documentation in place, and it ends up profiting the lawyers significantly more further down the line when things go wrong.
Yeah, so it's a whole kind of prevention rather than cure.
Absolutely. Yes.
So what sort of things do you have in mind? Do you have some examples that we could explore?
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of the where we see things go wrong, it tends to be around people who've been in business together for a long time, and by this I mean practice owners predominantly. They've been in business for a very, very long time. They've never had a fallout between themselves, and on that basis they've never seen fit to actually document the terms of their business relationship. It's never a problem until it's a problem, is what I always say. And we see people who've been in business 30 years, and it's only when one party wants to leave, and they get into discussions about money, or for example if one party wants to reduce their commitment in the practice, they then have disputes about who shares the expenditure and that kind of thing. You can see it on the employment side of things, or an HR side of things, where people have disputes with their associates and their staff because they don't have the correct written agreements in place. And you can see it even with family members, where people are either seriously incapacitated, or if they die and they haven't got the correct paperwork in place, it can lead to serious problems in the business. I mean, I do have some real world examples which I'm happy to share.
Yeah, I think that would be really good to help bring some of this to life. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have very recently acted for two chaps who, as I say, they've been in business for 30 years together. They don't have a formal written expense sharing agreement between them, which is the document which would govern the split of the proceeds and who covers the expenses and all the rest of it in the practice. They've always got on well, but one of them has now drastically reduced how much time they spend in the practice and how many patients they see, meaning that one of the partners is bringing in significantly more income than the other one. But the way they've historically split the income has been 50-50, and there is legal precedent for the fact that if that's what you've always done, that's the way it will always be.
So it's in split the profit, so they've,
yes,
had a profit sharing as opposed to an expense.
Absolutely,
sharing.
Yeah. So they've been splitting the profits 50-50, but because one of them now isn't effectively covering that 50% that they're taking out, it ended up in a dispute. To further complicate matters, one party wants to sell, and that is hugely messy, because the advice I always give to people is, well, you might want to sell your bit of the practice, but if there is a continuing partner in that business who is hostile, whether that's hostile to somebody buying you out or just hostile to you and wants to make life difficult, you're effectively trapped. So unfortunately, these guys, they tried to sort things out between themselves, but communication was the biggest barrier. They're both quite vociferous characters. And unfortunately, they both ended up communicating solely through solicitors, at significant expense to them. That didn't get them anywhere. And eventually, the way that that it was resolved was by going through a process of mediation. So an external mediator had to come in, sit with them, them in one room, one guy in the other room. And ultimately, they did reach a compromise that they were both happy with. And they ended up spending significant five-figure sums between them to actually reach that. When actually, at the very beginning, if they'd have had a document in place to govern what would happen, there would have been no need for that. Or even if they hadn't had a document in place, they could have worked on communicating with each other a little better. They would have managed to avoid their lawyers and all those costs at that time.
But it sounds like these sort of things inevitably become slightly personal, because it's one personality against another and one interpretation against another. So is what you're saying then, it'd be much better to have had those discussions when everyone's getting on and it's absolutely fine? So everyone could, because I guess that someone wouldn't take offense at the fact that actually, if the profit stops being a 50-50 split, let's apply some rules around that before we embark on this.
And I think any people who were at the start of their business relationship, I think if they had that discussion, it's perfectly reasonable to say that. If they go into it on the basis of, well, as long as we're matching each other in terms of the work that we're doing, then it's only fair that we each take 50%. It doesn't seem unreasonable to me for one party for them both to say also, and if that ever changes, we adjust the mechanism accordingly. So you're quite right, it should happen at the very, very beginning when everybody's getting on, because it's too late once everybody's fallen out, because you can't compel each other to reach agreement on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, I mean, in terms of the other example that we see, there's the situation with people who are trading as a limited company. What people don't know sometimes is that if you've got shareholders in a company, and there's a lot of incorporated dental practices out there, if there isn't an agreement in place between the shareholders, and say you've got dentist A and dentist B, each who own 50% of the shares in a practice, if dentist A dies and there's no document, well, dentist B will find himself in business with dentist A's family or whoever inherits his shares. Now, they're more than likely not going to be working in the practice and generating income. But in the absence of a shareholders agreement, there's nothing they can do about that.
Yeah, I think that whole issue of limited companies, you can understand why they've gone down that route, but you get the sense that some people haven't thought beyond the tax advantages of that.
Yes.
The ramifications of it in terms of the kind of example you just given.
Yeah, absolutely.
They just haven't contemplated.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, a completely different issue that you could do an entire podcast on is this situation which a lot of practices find themselves in, where they're NHS practices, yet everything goes through the limited company, and there's huge accounting and taxation problems with some of those kinds of structures that dentists have.
Yeah.
But that's a completely different issue. But yeah, the limited company side of things is complex.
Yeah. So what other scenarios have you come across?
The associate side of things, where people don't have properly drafted associate agreements in place with their associate. Without that in place, the associate can go and set up around the corner, and there's nothing that you can do to prevent them from encouraging the patients to go to them down the road. It's also important on a sale as well, because a buyer's going to want to expect to see that the goodwill is protected, and without properly drafted associate agreements in place with the associates, well, the buyer has no guarantee that what they're buying is going to be there at the point where they buy it. And then with family members, the other issue that we see, I mean, I mentioned the wills example, but it's not just that aspect of it, it's incapacity as well. We've acted for a practice principal's wife, who he had a serious skiing accident, and was incapacitated for a number of months. she couldn't run the practice because it was just his signature on everything. So you then get into the situation of powers of attorney and that sort of thing. There are all sorts of things that people can do to protect themselves to ensure business continuity.
So if you take that last example, what should they have done?
Well, they should have had a power of attorney in place. And what that does is, that gives the person who is granted the power of attorney, that gives them the right, under certain circumstances, to step into the shoes of the person who is incapacitated. So he should have had a power of attorney in place between himself and his wife, who was the practice manager. It would at least have allowed her to deal with the NHS, to deal with the bank accounts, to deal with the finances. But that practice effectively came to something of a standstill for a number of weeks whilst these issues were sorted out.
And with that power of attorney issue, is there a difference between a single-handed practice where I guess they've got to rely on family members to step up, and a partnership where could they give power of attorney to another partner?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. We've done that where in the interest of business continuity, partners have put powers of attorney in place to each other to allow them to run each other's practice and keep things going in the event that the worst happens. But it also goes back to the expense share agreement or partnership agreement that I mentioned, because you would also expect to see those provisions in there, giving rights to people to carry on each other's practices in the event that the worst happens.
Yeah. Okay. Any other examples?
Other examples of where they've got into dispute because there isn't the correct documentation in place yet. There's another one I can think of where we've dealt with a situation where a chap bought into a practice and it was on the property side of things where things weren't done correctly. And it turned out that when the chap bought in, he'd also negotiated himself an option to acquire the freehold of the practice premises. The people who he was going into business with owned the option, owned the freehold. So they're now looking to sell. He doesn't want to match their price for the freehold, but he's effectively now blocking them from exiting the practice. That situation has completely fallen apart. There's no communication between them in the practice. It's a complete mess, and that's purely because they didn't give due thought to the paperwork that was put in place at the beginning in respect of that option arrangement.
Yeah.
It can come from anywhere. It can come from the property, it can come from the business side of it, it can come from the estate planning side of it. The thread running through all of this, I would say, is that, you know, there might be an initial cost involved in putting some of this paperwork in place, but it's nothing compared to what people end up paying the solicitors to resolve it further.
Yeah, I can totally see that. There's a whole kind of, as we said right at the outset, a prevention rather than cure thing.
Yeah.
But it's worth investing that time and money just to get it on an even footing. I'm particularly struck by what you're saying about while everyone's getting on. Mm. I think that's really important, because trying to backpedal when things are starting to go downhill, that's going to be pretty tricky.
It's one of the first things we always say to anybody who comes to us with a dispute is, well, have you got an expense sharing agreement, or have you got a partnership agreement or a shareholders agreement? And all too frequently the response is either no or yes, I think there's a draft somewhere sitting in somebody's briefcase that we looked at, and then they'll produce it to us and nobody ever signed it. It's just sat in a briefcase for 15 years and nobody ever gets it out until there's a problem.
Yeah. Well, look, Tom, I've got a feeling that we could return to this subject on a regular basis and revisit many, many other examples, because that's been really, really useful, really interesting the way you brought that to life. So thank you very much for your time, and look forward to seeing you again soon.
Brilliant. Thanks, Nigel.